Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it is about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. Program 265 in the series. It's March 11th. It's a Sunday, and we are in the Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue playing our classic radio shows. Lisa Wolf, what's up?
Hi, how are you? We're only going to be here a little while longer before our big move. I think it's in May.
We're moving somewhere.
303 East Wacker.
Is that where we're going?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just a hop, skip, and a jump
look
over.
Look who's here, Mike Costello.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's up, Mike?
Not
how are
much.
You?
I'm good. Not Mike. So busy today, so
here
I am.
So there's nothing else going on, so
yeah,
we thought he'd just hang
around for a couple hours.
We won't even charge you rent.
Fair enough.
Well, you might not.
We have Shantae Garth in the booth, our producer, so we're going to have smooth sailing. And this evening, we are going to tune into Have Gun, Will Travel. And this is kind of an oddity because it was a radio show, but first it was a television show. Richard Boone starred as Paladin on TV. It was so successful that they migrated it to radio. Very interesting.
Yeah, a little bit backwards. And we have a fun fact for that. You can check it out on our WGN Radio Theater Facebook page. And you can, just so you know,
learn
that is our Facebook page. Learn about it. Check out all our photos and our schedule and anything else you'd like to know.
Fantastic. We also have X-1, a good sci-fi adventure from 1956. Then Orson Welles plays that scoundrel Harry Lime on The Lives of Harry Lime. So three great radio shows taking us all the way till 2 a.m. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride. And we have a Cat's Pride crack the quote game. What movie,
Lisa,
is it?
Our one is The Matrix.
Never saw it.
All right. Well, then I might just get you on this one.
I was 3 for 3 last night.
You sure were.
So what am I going to be, over 3?
We'll see.
You know,
you've got a 1 out of 3 chance no matter what. And the prize is a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weather Makers.
So let's let Mike play the game here, although he knows which one it is.
I can't play the game.
Yeah,
I know the answers.
He was instrumental
Mike.
The clips.
So you'll just have to hang out and not pay rent. All right, call us 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Never saw The Matrix. Never saw that
movie. Maybe you'll just have a hunch.
Okay. Win some prizes. Give us a call. We'll take the fifth caller,
05.
Why do I always want to say 50? Because Hawaii 50.
No, because you're a little backwards.
I am a little backwards. All right, we'll be right back and play the game.
It's time now for Crack the Quote. Brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have Jim on the line. He was our fifth caller. Hey, Jim.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you.
Good. Where are you calling from?
St. John, Indiana.
All right. We're glad you're with us. And the movie is The Matrix. Have you seen it?
Bits and pieces.
All right. Well, that might be enough.
That's more than I.
I was going to say that's more than Carl. So
how you doing, Jim?
We're going to give it a go.
I'm doing great, thank you.
All okay, right, terrific. Buddy. I'll give you three quotes. One of them is actually from the movie. Your job is to choose the right one, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Number one, every step requires sacrifice, suffering, and struggle. Number two, human progress is neither automatic nor inevitable. Number three, he believes it so blindly that he's going to sacrifice his life to save yours.
Number two.
That's the one I think it is.
Number two, human progress is neither automatic nor inevitable. All right, Shantae knows the answer.
He believes it so blindly that he's going to sacrifice his life to save yours.
Oh, boy.
You know what?
Jim.
You both said number two, but the good part about this is you were only one number off. And because of that, you are a winner. So you have on the desktop indoor weather station. It is really cool. It's brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. And of course, they are the 60 Minute Men. So congratulations on being our first caller, on winning the weather station. And thanks a lot for playing our game.
Thank you. You guys have a great show.
Thanks,
Take care, Jim.
Yeah, The Matrix. Oh, I've been wanting to watch that movie.
You know, you've got a chance to redeem yourself with hour two and three, so we'll see how it goes.
I was going so well, Mike. No. I had three right yesterday.
Yeah, I
which
heard.
Is a record.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well.
We'll add Roger in a little bit later and see how he does
yeah.
up there.
Mike, have you ever seen The Matrix?
I have.
Is it good?
Yes, it is.
Everybody says it's great. I don't know why I never watched it.
I can't believe you haven't seen it,
Have you seen it, Lisa?
I have not.
I didn't think
but
so.
I,
That's not your kind of movie.
It's not my kind of movie.
No.
I'm, you know, more about the Forrest Gump, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's
yeah,
Nest kind of gal.
Me too. All right. Well, you know what I am into?
A classic radio, for
classic
sure.
Classic radio. But before we get into this first show, I want to remind all of our listeners, our text in line is 312-981-7200. Now, it's very important that you text in tonight because Lisa didn't get a nap in earlier, and she will be out by about midnight. She'll be in the corner in a fetal position. Mike will tell you, right, Mike?
Yes.
Mike.
And
Mike.
If we want her to stay up throughout the show, we need you guys to text in. It could be anything. Text in questions about the show.
Somebody just said Matrix
Lisa's
rules.
Shoe size, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I am watching the phone line.
She has one foot that's like a 30, and then the other one's a 4.
What does that
she
even
has one
mean?
Giant foot.
What does that mean, a 30?
Size 30.
A 30 foot? That doesn't even make any sense.
Well, text us 312-981-7200. Very important. We want to keep Lisa up. All right. Have Gun, Will Travel was a, as I said, a TV show. Came to television in 1957. Then a year later, it transitioned to radio. Very odd. Because 99% of the shows did it the opposite way. Richard Boone played Paladin on TV. John Daner played him on radio. And did you know this? Gene Roddenberry, who created Star Trek, wrote 24 episodes of this series. His a lot of his work was on Have Gun, Will Travel. You know, Paladin, he was an interesting guy. He was a Union cavalry soldier, graduate of U.S. Military Academy at West Point, and he was a decorated Civil War veteran. He was well-schooled, highly educated. He became rich after the Army as a hired gun because he charged very high prices. He lived at the Swank Hotel Carlton. You see how swanky it was on the TV show? I mean, he was dressed like... You know, really, but
Dapper.
Then, yeah, but then what would happen is he'd get hired and he'd put all black on and he'd get on his horse and he had this really cool gun. His gun was a custom-made 45 caliber Colt single-action Army revolver. And then he had a little derringer that he would tuck under his belt. He was a bad dude.
Yeah, he was a cool guy.
You don't want to mess with Paladin.
Oh, no.
Reminds me of Mike Estella,
yeah,
you know. Mike knows karate. Don't mess with Mike.
I could see that.
We have a broadcast for you now called Assignment in Stone's Crossing. It stars John Daner as Paladin. Here's part one of Have Gun, Will Travel.
You men are mistaken. I'm not an executioner. But you're still going to pay me that money because I came a long way to face this ridiculous situation.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of a man called Paladin.
Miss Wong, what are you giggling about?
Oh, Mr. Paladin, you look so funny. Play that game. Silver Dollar, throw him in air, let him fall. Pick him up, throw him in air, let him fall. What is this game?
This is not a game, Miss Wong. It's serious business.
Oh, how so?
Well, you see, I've had an urgent wire from a man named Jules Cleaver. He wants me to come to a place named Stone's Crossing. Never heard of it.
No.
Immediately.
Oh, Lisa Farleden, why you fritter away your time playing games when you have urgent business?
Miss Wong, it wasn't a game. The opera ball is day after tomorrow. Now, I'd planned on that.
Lisa.
So I said to myself, I'll toss a coin. Heads, I'll take the job. Tails, I'll go to the ball.
So?
It came up heads.
Heads.
I take the job. And then I said, no. 3 out of 5. Heads.
Heads.
4 out of 7. Heads.
Heads.
5 out of 9. Heads.
Heads.
So it looks like I better take the job. Miss Wong.
Oh, Rita Pollard. Play that game some more. It's much fun to watch.
I rode into a section of Nevada territory I'd never traveled before. A stark, desolate plain, with its line to the horizon broken only by sparse, dry sagebrush. The ground was lava-formed, hot and hard, and the ash-like dust that rose off it burned my eyes, closed my throat. I'd gone about 5 miles when my horse stumbled and fell, and broke his leg. I was reminded then that when things seem bad, they can always get worse. There was nothing to do but shoulder my gear, walk back to the last water hole I had seen, and hope that help would show up. 3 days passed before I heard the sound I was waiting for. You better go a little easy on that water there. Now hold it, friend. There's no need to reach for that gun. Doesn't look to me as if you could lift it, let alone aim it straight.
You shouldn't sneak up on a man like that.
And you better let me take a look at that wound.
It's no use, mister.
All right, let me just take a look at it. Huh, rifle, huh?
Lucky shot.
This should have had attention.
I was might short of time. Posse been trailing me for 5 days.
Posse?
Out of Marvin. He didn't take kindly to my shooting one of their citizens.
What was the trouble?
No trouble. Somebody paid me $500 for killing him.
Hired gun.
You ever hear Myron Curtis?
Yes.
That's me. Hey, what are you doing sitting out here by this water hole besides poking into people's business?
My horse broke his leg out there in the desert.
Had to shoot him?
That's right.
Well, now, this work out just dandy. I'm gonna make you a present of my little mare there. I won't be needing her.
Well, now, look, you...
You... Watch her left front hoof. She's missing a shoe. Where are you headed?
Stone's Crossing.
Stone's Crossing. That was going to be my next stop. Fella sent for me. Let's see, Hanson. Yeah, that's it. Mike Hanson. I wonder what he's got up his sleeve. I guess I'll never know now.
Curtis? I buried Myron Curtis, then mounted his mare and started once more for Stone's Crossing and my appointment with Jules Cleaver. The going was slow. It was almost nightfall when I decided to make camp and go on to the town the next morning. I was gathering firewood when I heard the two horses. They came from the direction of the setting sun. And I wasn't able to see until they were right on me that both riders held rifles pointed in my direction.
Don't make one move, mister.
Hey, what's the idea?
Rally?
Yeah?
Keep your rifle on him now while I get his gun.
And now, wait a minute.
We don't want no talk from you, Curtis.
Curtis?
Just give me that gun. You know, I'm like this. I just don't give up. The others, they turn back, but not me. I knew I'd find you.
Would it do any good for me to tell you that I am not Curtis?
Not a lick.
Did you ever see Curtis?
Nope. We joined up when the posse organized back there in Marvin. All I had to know is that we was after a killer.
Well, what makes you think that I'm that killer?
Now, let me tell you something. Ed Wills don't bow to nobody, Indian or white, when it comes to tracking a man. Tell him, Crowley.
That's right. Ain't nobody better than Ed.
I followed your trail for too many miles out of Marvin not to recognize them tracks when we crossed them again back there. Your barefoot horse put the noose around your neck, Curtis. Now, Crowley, get down here and get his hands tied behind his back.
We're going to take him back to Marvin, Ed?
Yeah. But he'll be slung over that mare on his belly when he goes. We're going to hang him first.
This is the cold season. What do medical authorities say about the common cold? Doctors tell us there's no known drug which will cure a cold. There are effective medications for treating complications accompanying or following a cold. If you've been taking sensible precautions and still have one cold after another, it's best to see your doctor. And here's another important health tip. When you have a cold and need a laxative, that's the time to rely on Gentle X-Lax. Pleasant-tasting, chocolated X-Lax helps you toward your normal regularity gently overnight. X-Lax gets along with any cold remedies you may be taking, and X-Lax works where nature wants, in the lower tract, not the stomach. Taken at bedtime, X-Lax won't disturb sleep, gives you the closest thing to natural action the next morning. You're well on your way toward your normal regularity without upset or discomfort. So when you have a cold and need a laxative, take X-Lax, the laxative you can use with complete confidence. X-Lax helps you toward your normal regularity gently overnight. X-Lax.
There you go, Lisa. X-Lax. I know you need that.
I was sitting here thinking, gosh, I wish I had X-Lax.
I know, you need that.
All the time.
You're always
day,
so constipated.
Day, morning, day, and night. I don't know. Is that? Oh, I thought, oh, is that what it's for? Yeah.
You don't know what X-Lax is
for? I couldn't remember if it was for constipation or diarrhea. I knew it was one of those.
That's for constipation.
Okay, yeah, we used X-Lax as a cheer for the marching band.
What is that?
Yes.
What do you mean?
Well, you know how you would spell out words,
uh-huh.
Right? The cheerleaders would go, you know, give me a A,
X.
Whatever,
give me an
right?
X.
So we did the give me an E-X-L-A-X, and we'd say, what does it spell? X-Lax, and what does it mean? Go, team, go.
Very good, Roger. I had your back. I had the...
I know you did.
You set him up beautifully, Roger.
I had your back, buddy. All right, more hijinks after these words. You know, I'm thinking of auctioning off my other MyPillow,
right,
to raise money for charity. I'm never going to use it. It's in a glass case.
Right.
I use my own MyPillow.
Maybe someday your princess will come.
I don't think so, Lisa.
I'm counting on it, because then you won't have to,
it's
you know.
It's in a glass case.
You
I
don't
have a little...
to, you know, moan and whine all week about, oh, woe is me.
Hello.
And then, oh, no.
I have a little glass case around it and a little hammer, you know, so that if in an emergency.
Like a Beauty and the Beast kind
of
flower that's wilting.
I can break that thing, but I keep waiting for that emergency.
One day.
Never happens.
I think it's, I have faith it's going to happen, and you have to believe it too, or it won't.
And when that happens, you won't have the hammer anymore.
And I won't have to have the hammer anymore. I could
right.
just, I'll wish upon a star, I guess.
I will do that for you as well.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolfe.
That's you and me, Lisa.
It's me and you, Carl.
And Mike Costello's here as well.
Hello.
Mike, our executive producer and the man who makes these shows sound so amazing. You know, Mike and I were talking about this yesterday. We are so proud of our signature, kind of our signature voice to these shows is that we play them from master recording. So Mike gets a master recording on a 16-inch transcription disc. We have a lab in Los Angeles. There's actually two labs we use, and they do the transfer of the disc because they're amazing at it. Then Mike gets that file, and he does wonders with it because there's a lot of little clicks and pops and sometimes dropouts and things. But Mike has all these tools, and he makes them sound like we have on the air here on WGN. We don't want to play dubs of dubs. We want to play master recording sound.
That's why we're on WGN, because we played the pristine quality shows. Yeah. That's the only way we do it here.
And Mike is probably not happy he ever met me, because his whole life has been classic radio now.
Hey, I enjoy it. It's I didn't know anything about it until I met you, actually. So. Yeah.
Poor guy. It's all he does is listen to classic radio and clean him up all day long, morning and night. And I have I do have the key. Here's the key to the handcuffs. I will let you have one day off.
That sounds a little kinky.
Lisa,
I'm so sorry, but you're putting him in handcuffs and you're holding the key.
To make him.
Well, I didn't get to hear that part. I didn't hear that part.
All right, let's listen to the conclusion now of Have Gun, Will Travel.
I sat through the night, my hands and feet bound and the two rifles trained on me. Then just before sunup, we rode out in search of a tree to serve as gallows. Unfortunately, after a time, we were successful. I sat on the little mare under a spreading limb with the noose tied around my neck while the men made their preparations, and I hadn't the slightest idea how to save myself. I only knew I must stall as long as possible.
Hey, Ed, this is awful close to Stone's Crossing. There's some people don't take to this, you know.
Yeah, this is the first stand of trees we come to.
I know, but there's some people's awful finicky about hangings.
Yeah, it won't take long now.
As soon as I get this rope over.
Yeah. Anna.
Hey, I'd like to ask you something.
Fire away. Your time's getting short.
Would it bother you to learn later that you had hanged the wrong man?
Yes, it would. And that's the truth. As far as I can see, you ain't the wrong man. Tie off the end of the rope there, Crowley.
Suppose I told you that Curtis is dead, that he gave me this horse.
Well, now, just supposing you did. You hear that, Crowley? Looky, Curtis, the way I heard it, you're a pretty slick one. You ought to be able to do better than that.
Yes, I guess I'll have to.
Hey, Ken? I can hear a horse headed this way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, looks like we're ready. Stand back, Crowley, while I give this mare a whack. Get her going.
Wait.
Yeah?
I trust you are a God-fearing man.
I am that.
Then surely you will allow me a moment to silently make my peace with my maker.
Ed, can't you see he's stalling? That horse is moving in here fast.
Sure is. Sorry, Curtis. Guess you'll have to die unrepented. Hey, give the horse a whack, Crowley.
Wait a minute.
Now, what is this? What's going on here?
You see, he was with a posse. We trailed this man from Marvin.
Now, this here's Myron Curtis. He's wanted for a killing.
Who? Myron Curtis, hired gun.
These men are mistaken, mister. My name is Paladin.
Wait a minute. Let's have a look at you. Well, of course. I didn't recognize you right off with that growth of beard. It's been a long time.
You know this man?
Yes. And his name is Paladin.
It can't be. We followed his trail from Marvin, I tell you.
Look, all I've got to say to you two is get out of here fast before I take you into the sheriff.
Well, I'm a little confused. Because, of course, you've never seen me before in your life. But I'm mighty grateful.
Just glad I happened along when I did, Curtis.
Paladin.
Oh, you can drop that now. It's all right. I know you're Curtis.
Oh, you do?
Sure. You have to be. I was wondering when you were going to show up.
Yes?
I'm Mike Hansen. I've begun to think maybe you hadn't received my message. But I can see that you ran into a little trouble getting here.
I certainly did.
I have to turn off at the fork up here. I guess you want to get on into town. But maybe this is as good a time as any to bring up my proposition.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
When I heard about you, Curtis, I knew you were the man to do this job for me. That's why I sent for you.
And the job?
Well, with a man like you, there's no need to beat about the bush. Curtis, Stone's Crossing is a pretty big town, and it's going to get bigger. But it's never going to be big enough to hold me and a man named Jules Cleaver.
Jules Cleaver?
I intend that Stone's Crossing is going to be my town. Cleaver's in my way. I'm going to lay it right on the line. I want you to get rid of him for me.
I see.
Will $3,000 handle it?
$3,000? Hanson, could we do it this way? Could we let the matter rest right here for now? You'll hear from me.
Sure, Curtis. I'll figure to hear from you later.
Even if you've had embarrassing dandruff for years, you can get rid of it now in 3 minutes. That's all it takes with Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo. Yes, unsightly dandruff's gone in 3 minutes with Fitch, quickest, easiest of all leading shampoos. What's more, using Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep embarrassing dandruff away. Just apply in the unique Fitch manner. Before you wet hair, rub in 1 minute. This way, Fitch shampoo penetrates right down to the scalp. Next, add water. Lather 1 minute to wash every trace of dandruff out of your hair. Then rinse 1 minute. All that loosened dandruff goes down the drain. In 3 minutes with Fitch, one rubbing, one lathering, one rinsing, dandruff's gone. At the same time, gentle Fitch can leave your hair up to 35% brighter. To get rid of dandruff problems forever, brighten hair too. Use Fitch regularly. Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo today, only 59 cents.
I was grateful to Mike Hanson for saving my life, but I figured the explanations I owed him would have to wait. After all, Jules Cleaver was my client. I had traveled a long way to keep this assignment. I checked into the hotel at Stone's Crossing and called at Cleaver's home that afternoon. Mr. Cleaver?
Yes?
Your servant told me I'd find you here in your study. I'm Paladin, Mr. Cleaver.
Paladin? Oh, where have you been? I've been expecting you for days.
Well, I ran into a few delays. I got into town this morning, but there are a few things I'd take care of, like a bath, a shave, a decent meal. So, what's on your mind, Mr. Cleaver?
Ah, that's what I like. You're a businessman. I'm a businessman. Let's not waste time. Let's get right to the point. Sit down, Paladin.
All right.
Well, Paladin, a businessman, or anyone for that matter, striving for success or certain attainments, finds, as a matter of course, obstacles along the way. If he intends to forge ahead, the obstacles must be removed, right?
Yes, I suppose so.
Now, I'm a determined man.
Oh?
At the moment, there's an obstacle in my path. A man named Mike Hanson.
Yes.
And I'm going to lay it right on the line. I want you to get rid of him for me. How about, $3,000 for the job?
$3,000. Well, I've come a long way for this meeting, Mr. Cleaver.
Yeah?
It's been uncomfortable and miserable. I was nearly hanged in the bargain, but I'm afraid I've arrived here to find that there's been a misunderstanding.
What do you mean?
I am not an executioner, Mr. Cleaver.
Huh? Your gun is for hire, isn't it?
Well, my... Look, suppose we let the deal remain right here for the moment. I'll get in touch with you.
Well, all right.
I had been surprised to find Stone's Crossing the prosperous town that it was. Then, as I rode back to my hotel, I took note of the fact that all the places of business seemed to be owned and controlled by either M. Hanson or J.J. Cleaver. It appeared that I was involved with the two leading citizens. That afternoon, I gave the matter careful consideration. Then I sent messages to the two gentlemen. Oh, hello, Hanson. Come in.
I got your message.
Hey, you're right on time. Want a drink?
Oh, no, thanks. I don't have much time. Well, did you decide to accept my offer, Curtis?
Hanson, I am not Myron Curtis. He is dead.
Dead?
Yes. And my name is Paladin.
Well,
excuse me. Hello, Cleaver.
Cleaver.
Come in.
Hanson. Paladin,
now,
what's the meaning of this?
What's going on here?
Now, you'll find out, both of you. Sit down.
I still want to know.
And be quiet. Gentlemen, I asked you to meet with me here in my hotel because I feel that we're involved in a situation that requires further discussion. Now, this morning, Mr. Hansen, you made me an offer of $3,000 to kill Mr. Cleaver.
What?
And you, Mr. Cleaver, early this afternoon made me an offer of $3,000 to kill Mr. Hansen.
Well, now, why, look here, Cleaver.
Quiet. Now, you both can see what this means, can't you? This means that I would have $6,000 and you would both be dead.
I'm getting out of here.
Now you sit down. I'm going to give you a chance to reconsider. This is my offer. I'm going to lay it on the line, a phrase you gentlemen are so fond of. You will each pay me $3,000, and I will see that you both stay alive.
No, well, what
you're
kind
nothing
of
but a cheap gunslinger, Paladin.
And you're going to pay me that money, too, because I came a long ways to face this ridiculous situation, and I brought you together here today so you could learn just how stupid you are. Now, I am not a killer, but you, Cleaver, didn't know that when you hired me for this job. You thought you'd bought yourself an executioner.
Well, then how come
you... And the man you hired, Hansen, never managed to make it this far. He died before you could make a deal with him. So, through circumstance, you gentlemen have another chance.
Paladin.
There's room in Stone's Crossing for both of you. May I suggest that you try to share the town in peace? Each of you, in attempting to destroy the other, just might find yourself destroyed. Now, gentlemen, shall we have a drink?
Mr. Paladin, so nice to have you home again.
Thank you, hey boy.
Missy Wong have surprise for you.
Oh, what's she been up to now?
You wait, you'll see. You go in, Mr. Paladin.
Well, now... Well, what's all this?
Very fancy, huh? Oh, Missy Wong, so sorry you can't go to opera ball. When she clean rooms in hotel, she save all party favors. Decorate for you.
Well, I'm overwhelmed. Look at that. Paper hats, balloons, streamers. Well, this is festive. I tell you what, hey boy. Tonight, we'll order up some champagne. And you and Miss Wong and I will have our own ball.
Oh, Esau, very nice. Hey, Mr. Paladin, you have a very angry red scar on neck. What is that?
It's a rope burn, hey boy.
Rope burn?
Yes. It's to remind me the next time I travel in Nevada territory to be sure to bypass a place called Stone's Crossing.
Oh, brother, this miserable cold and my sinuses.
Haven't you heard about Dristan? Dristan decongestant tablets not only help drain all 8 sinus cavities, critical areas of cold's infection, but circulating through the blood, Dristan reaches all congested areas. In one fast-acting, uncoated 3-layer tablet, Dristan, for the first time, combines
a decongestant to shrink all swollen membranes, relieve pressure and pain.
An exclusive anti-allergent to help keep breathing passages dry and clear.
Pain relievers to ease body aches, reduce fever.
Vitamin C to help build body resistance. This is Dristan. Today, Dristan is widely imitated, but the exclusive Dristan formula cannot be duplicated. For real relief from colds, misery, and sinus congestion, there's nothing, nothing like Dristan decongestant tablets.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed in Hollywood by Frank Paris and stars John Daner as Paladin, with Ben Wright as Hayboy and Virginia Gregg as Miss Wong. Tonight's story was specially written for Have Gun, Will Travel by Ann Dowd. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, Jack Moyles, Joseph Cranston, Bartlett Robinson, and Vic Perrin. This is Hugh Douglas inviting you to join us again next week when CBS Radio presents... Have Gun, Will Travel.
That's one of the best westerns of the golden age of radio right there. Have Gun, Will Travel, November 29th, 1959, with Assignment in Stone's Crossing, starring John Daner. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. I want to thank all of our listeners because so far Lisa has not fallen asleep. Yeah, people have been texting in, keeping her up, so that's good.
You know, I think you're projecting your inadequacies on me because generally...
Wow, that's a big... Hang on, I'm going to see how many syllables. Inadequacies.
No, you missed one. Inadequacies.
Inadequacies. That's a lot of syllables, Roger.
What I mean is you tend to, you know, nod off, take a little doze in the green room, and I'm the one to, like, running laps around the radio station.
I have been known to doze off.
I didn't
here.
Know. Didn't I know, never. Been, I usually take a picture of you every time, and sometimes even a video,
you know,
while you're
does,
snoring.
Roger?
Wait
I take
a minute.
Videos.
Carl dozes off? Never.
Sometimes.
Never.
It's, you know, possible.
I have a picture that she sent me. She took a picture of me while I was dozing.
I always do.
It's so funny.
His mouth is open. The drool
it's
is
hilarious.
Spilling
is
out
he
of
like
his mouth.
Like a little puppy dog, the tongue is hanging off on the side, and he kind of kicks
snores.
His legs every
he
so
snores,
often.
He snores, and I have a good time with
I'm
it.
Thinking of using it as my. I'm thinking of using it as my profile picture on WGN.
Let's
be
do
good.
It. Do
Let's
it.
Do it. If you knew how to post one, then you could do it.
all right. Next hour, we're going to tune into X-1, a good sci-fi adventure. Then it is The Lives of Harry Lime, starring Orson Welles. So two more hours of classic radio coming your way.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
That's the golden tones of Bill Curtis there. And before that, it was Roger Badish. And in between the news was Jen DeSalvo doing the traffic. And to my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. We have Shantae Garth in the booth. Mike just left. I'm surrounded by pros, absolute pros, which makes
I can't
me
argue at all
look
with you.
Worse because I am an amateur. And
it makes you
pros.
Better because you have a
That's
great team
true.
And we all make each other better.
We lift this. We lift everybody's
Love
sails.
Lift us up where we no, belong.
Let's not go there. No, because then you'll get him going. Pretty soon it'll be disco. And
we're
going to
be
his,
doing a little
yeah,
Saturday Night Fever.
No, let's not.
You know, Roger, I am a frustrated singer. You know that, don't you?
You were frustrated, all right.
Well, he's frustrated.
I'm very frustrated.
Speaking of
Let's
your team.
Let's just leave it at that.
Yes. We'll leave it at that. No, I'm not going to give you a chance. No. No. You could go ahead and hit the button if you want to.
Roger, will you play a little Carl's on Crack with us or Crack the Quote or whatever the game is?
Stop with the crack jokes. Would you?
I would love to.
Thank you.
In this hour, X-1 starring Carl Weber, a fellow Carl.
Carl.
And our three Lives of Harry Lime. But first, we're going to play Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. What's the movie?
The movie is Star Wars.
Oh, I didn't see this either.
All right.
I've not seen one Star Wars movie.
Roger, did you see
yep.
it?
All
not
of them.
Not one.
Okay,
I'm not
going to
get any of these right.
You
now,
might get it anyways.
Which one is this?
This
which
is
one?
Just the original Star Wars.
The original.
Mm-hmm.
New beginning. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Give us a call. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll take the fourth caller. And what do they win? Twilight Zone?
Yes, Twilight Zone radio dramas
All
for
right.
CD sets.
Very good. Give us a call right now. We'll play the game. Then we'll tune into X-1 right after these words.
Win the.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We have Carrie on the line. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Great. We're glad you called
Hi,
in.
Carrie.
We're
going
to play a little Crack the Quote. The movie is Star Wars. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Good. Then you are in a better position than my co-host over here. So you know how to play. We've got three quotes. One of them is the right one. Your job is to tell me which one it is. And you've got some friends helping you. We've got Carl and Roger. But
isn't Jen going to try?
Are you
going to
play with us, Jen?
Sure.
All right. We're going to add Jen in, but we'll go to Carrie first, and then we'll see what somebody's going to get this one right. I'm sure of it. Okay. All right. Number one, the Emperor is not as forgiving as I am. Number two, bow down, I am the Emperor of Dreams. Number three, the Supreme Empire is that of the Emperor.
Oh, that's a tough one.
I know.
I'm going to say three.
Number three.
Yep, that's what I'm going to say.
Okay, number three, Jen.
I'm going with number one.
Yep.
Roger
can't contain himself up there. He's like busting at the seams.
We've got two number threes and
two number ones, and Shantae is the only one besides me that knows the right answer. Help us out.
I even know who said it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
He's a little know-it-all up there. Okay.
The emperor is not as forgiving as
So we have two winners here. The good news, Carrie, is that you are the winner. Even though you said number three, that's almost like number one. We're going to count it as a win. It's so close. And you are the winner of Twilight Zone audio CDs. It's a four CD set. And they are fantastic. It's hosted by Stacy Keach. And we hope you enjoy that.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in tonight or this morning.
All right. Well, it's time for X-1. This was a science fiction radio drama series. Came to radio in 1955, lasted until 1958. It was a revival of NBC's Dimension X, which ran for two seasons from 1950 to 1951. And most of the stories were adapted by Ernest Canoy and George Lefferts. And it was based on stories by Isaac Asimov, Ray Bradbury, Robert A. Heinlein, Frederick Pohl. And no movie stars were on the show. It was just supporting players like Louis Van Ruten, Bob Hastings, Paul Frees, William Conrad. So we have a terrific episode for you now called Bad Medicine. It stars a former Carl Weber. Yeah, a fellow Carl.
I thought you were the only person named Carl.
Well, he spells it wrong. He spells it with a K.
Yeah, that's just wrong.
This is from July 10th, 1956, part one now of X-1.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2. X-1. Fire. The far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, Bad Medicine by Finn O'Donovan. And now, on with our story.
On May 2nd, 2103, Elwood Caswell walked rapidly down Broadway. It was a gentle, misty spring day, and the air held the smell of rain and blossoming trees. But Elwood Caswell didn't smell the rain and the trees. He just gripped the loaded gun he had in his pocket. He didn't want to use the weapon, but he was certain that he would. This was justifiable. You see, Elwood Caswell was a homicidal maniac.
Why shouldn't I kill him?
Hey, look out, will you?
Oh, sorry, sir. Only the other day he said to me, Elwood, you're looking very well. What business is it of his how I look?
Hey there, Elwood! Elwood!
Huh?
It's me, Marty Klein. I work on the jet buses with you, remember?
Oh, yeah, of course. Hello, Marty. Forgive me, my mind was on other things.
Yeah, I know how it is. A couple of weeks ago, I was walking around in a fog so thick you could cut it.
Yeah, really?
Sure, preoccupied. You know, I had this idea in my mind.
You too?
Yeah.
The same person?
Huh?
Were you troubled by the same person?
My wife. Hey, you okay?
Oh, yeah. Yes, of course.
Well, I had this idea, see? I was going to get rid of my wife.
Kill her?
Kill her? I mean, send her to a country for a week.
Oh.
You sure you ain't sick?
No, I never felt better.
Well, anyway, I was going to take a week off. Quit the jet buses. Hey, can you imagine? I've been a jet bus operator for 10 years now, and all of a sudden, I feel like I can't take it for another minute.
I know how you feel.
I was going to take a trip all by myself.
A trip?
To where? To the farthest place I could think, to Mars. I was just going to pick up and take a vacation to Mars. Silly, huh?
I don't know. What happened?
Well, I talked it over with Ethel.
Your wife?
Yeah. Ethel, she's a real sensible girl. You know what she did?
No, am I supposed to?
Well, Ethel went right down to that home therapy appliance store, and she says, you got a home therapy machine that'll cure my husband of this idea he can't stay on the jet buses?
I've heard that those machines aren't perfected.
They got them licked now. So, okay, she describes the trouble, and next day they deliver this thing, and boom, I plug it in, see?
And
a voice talks to me. It starts asking me questions.
Yeah, what kind of questions?
All kinds. Things I wouldn't even tell my own mother.
You told the machine?
Why not? It's only a machine.
Yeah, I see your point.
Well, then the machine starts to tell me a few things. And before I knew it, inside a week, I'm cured. Now, I can't wait to go back driving the jet buses.
You don't say.
So that's why I say I know how it is to have one thing on your mind all the time like that.
This machine, what did it cost you?
That's the beauty part of it. By Ethel. Boy, she's a smart girl. After a week, she sends it back, see? She says it don't work. So all we lose is the deposit.
I see.
Well, I gotta get back to work now. Hey, ain't you working the jet buses today?
Huh? No, I'm off today.
Well, I'll see you, Elwood.
Yeah, see you, Marty. What was the name of that place?
Where they sell the home therapy machine.
Yeah.
Home Therapy Appliances. It's right down Broadway, about 2 blocks from here. So long, Elwood.
Perspiring freely, Elwood Caswell continued down Broadway toward 43rd Street. His friend Magnuson would be finishing work soon, returning to his apartment less than a block from Caswell's. Elwood gripped the gun tighter. How pleasant it would be to saunter in, exchange a word with him, and then...
No. No, I won't do it. I don't really want to kill anybody. It isn't right. Think what'll happen. The authorities will lock me up. My friends won't understand, and... Mother. Mother would never approve. Still, if I see Magnuson... I see his hateful, accusing face in front of me. Oh, this must be the store. Yeah. Home Therapy Appliances.
Good afternoon, sir. Can I show you some of our home therapy appliances?
I want therapy. Quick.
Of course, sir. This way, please. Now then, this is our new alcoholic reliever built by International Combustion Motors and advertised in leading magazines. A handsome piece of furniture. I think you will agree, and not out of place in any home. It also opens into a television set.
Look, what I need...
Therapy, of course. I just want to point out this model need never cause embarrassment to you, your friends, or your loved ones. Notice, if you will, the recessed dial which controls the desired degree of alcoholism. You see, heavy, moderate, social... Light and teetotal. A new feature unique in mechanotherapy.
I'm not alcoholic. The New York Jet Bus Authority does not hire alcoholics.
Oh, sorry. You seem the type. No offense.
Please.
You seem rather nervous. Perhaps the portable anxiety reducer.
No.
Well, sir, perhaps if you told me just what you feel is bothering you.
What have you got for homicidal mania?
I beg your pardon.
Homicide? The urge to kill someone.
Oh, of course. Well, let's see now.
Pardon me. Have you worked here very long?
A week. Oh, yes. Here's the ticket. This black job with the chrome trim.
What is it?
This, sir, is a Rex regenerator built by Planetary Motors Corporation. Handsome. Goes with any decor. Opens into a well-stocked little bar so your family, friends, loved ones need never...
Will a pure homicidal urge, a strong one?
Oh, absolutely. Don't confuse this with the little 10-amp neurosis model. This is a hefty, heavy-duty, 25-amp machine for really deep-rooted conditions.
That's what I've got.
Well, this baby will jolt you out of it. Big, heavy-duty thrust bearings, oversized heat absorbers, completely insulated, sensitivity range
I'll
over...
I'll take it.
Yes, sir.
With me, right now.
Now?
Before it's too late. I'll pay cash.
Well, yes, sir. It'll be a few hours before the warehouse can...
I'll take this one here.
Well, that's a floor demonstrator.
Does it work?
All of our demonstrators work.
Then I'll take it. I can't wait for a warehouse. I can't wait for anything.
Have it put in a taxi for me.
Yes, sir.
Tell him to hurry. I want to kill my friend Magnuson, you know.
Who?
My friend Magnuson.
Oh, of course. That'll be $400.59, sales tax included.
After Elwood Caswell left the store, the clerk, whose name was Haskins, smiled to himself and lighted a cigarette. He had made his first sale. He inhaled.
Haskins?
Yes, Miss Follinsby?
Smoking? I asked you to rid yourself of that filthy habit.
Immediately, Mr. Follinsby. I'll use one of those display model denicotinizers at once. By the way, I just made a rather good sale, sir.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir. One of our big Rex regenerators.
Well, now, it isn't often we... Wait a minute. Where's the floor model?
Well, sir, the customer was in an awful hurry. He was going to kill his friend.
You gave him the floor model?
Yes, sir. Was there any reason why...
Oh, grief, Haskins! Didn't I inform you we never sell a floor model?
But, sir...
Good heavens! I've got to get to him. What was his address?
Address?
His name, then.
Well, he didn't say.
Then his check.
But he paid cash.
You mean you just let him pick up the machine and walk out?
Well, sir, he paid cash.
He was homicidal, you say?
Yes, sir. His friend...
I don't care about his friend. Get the police. No. Call the Planetary Motor Security Division. Quick.
Yes, at once.
Well.
Excuse me, Mr. Follinsby. What will I tell them?
Tell them, you fool. Tell them that one of our customers accidentally got that display regenerator they sent us. The one they shipped by accident. They were going to replace it tomorrow.
Yes, sir. The one they shipped by accident. Will they know?
If they don't be more explicit, tell them we've sold the Martian model. The one for treating psychotic Martians.
Meanwhile, Elwood Caswell had returned to his apartment and lugged the big black Rex regenerator into his living room. He put it down near the couch and studied it carefully.
He was right. It does go with the room. Now then, let's see those instructions. Place regenerator near a comfortable couch. All right. Plug in machine. There. Affix contact band to your forehead. That's all there is to it. Just turn on the machine and it will do the rest. There will be no language problem since your regenerator communicates with you by direct sensory contact, patent pending. Well, it seems easy enough. Now, I'll just put the contact on my head. And blast it. Hello?
Elwood?
Yes?
This is Henry. Henry Magnuson. How are you, old boy?
I'm fine.
I wondered if you were doing anything tonight. Thought you might like to drop over for a game of chess.
Game of chess, huh? You stupid oaf.
What?
Nothing.
I thought you called me a stupid oaf.
Yeah, just talking to my cat.
Oh. I didn't remember you had a cat. I thought you hated cats.
Oh, I do. This isn't really mine. It's the neighbor's. It keeps coming in.
Oh. What about tonight?
Will you be alone?
Well, yeah.
You haven't mentioned to anyone that you're inviting me over?
Not a soul. Why?
Someone's looking for me. A process server.
Oh.
Yeah, I've been avoiding him for days. I don't even leave word where I'll be when I go out.
You can trust me, Elwood. I'm your best friend.
Yes, you are. But not for long.
Huh?
Just talking to the cat again.
Oh. Well, will you be over?
Yeah.
In about an hour, okay?
Yeah, an hour will be fine. There are a few things I have to do
first.
I've
just gotten some new laugh records from the boys at the office. I got something here that'll really kill you. So long, Elwood.
So long. I've got something here that'll kill you, too.
That's the first portion of X-1 with Bad Medicine from July 10th, 1956, starring Carl Weber. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes. Okie dokie. We are tuning in to X-1. That's coming up after the news. We'll have the conclusion to that. Then Orson Welles, as I like to say, oh, Welles.
Oh, well.
Oh, Welles. Is going to be starring in The Lives of Harry Lyme. And that's an interesting series, too, Lisa, because It was based on the character, Harry Lime, that he played in the movie The Third Man. And it was a very famous movie, but his character of Harry Lime dies in the sewers of Vienna. He's shot in the movie. He's killed. And so how do you do a radio show?
You do a prequel.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. I'm doing my homework, Karl Marx.
Yes. Sort of like a prequel, and then you take some NyQuil and you go to bed.
Well, they kind of average each other out. So then it's like you've done nothing. If you do the pre and the post, it's like they just cancel each other.
What?
Too much for you.
Lost me.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
It is 12:34 in the morning, and thanks for staying up late with us. We are in the midst of tuning in to X-1. And, you know, there were very few adult science fiction radio shows, Lisa. The first was Dimension X, and that was a lot like X-1. In fact, it was really the same people that did both shows. Dimension X and X-1 took all the great science fiction writers of the era and took their stories and dramatized them on radio. It was produced out of New York, so it was all New York-based radio actors. But science fiction on radio was primarily kids' programming, like Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon and things like that. So in 1950, when Dimension X premiered, it was really kind of a new thing, you know, to hear a weekly half-hour science fiction story for adults,
right?
Well,
like
families,
like a Twilight Zone,
but not a kid's thing, exactly. Right. And then after Dimension X went off the air, there was a sort of a hiatus, and then X-1 came back on in the late mid-50s, and it lasted a little longer. I think it was on 3 or 4 years. And we're turning in to a very good episode called Bad Medicine from July 10th, 1956. Here's the conclusion now of X-1.
X-1 will continue in 1 minute.
Each of us has a personal reason for wanting to see cancer conquered. Steve Allen would like to tell you his.
I have a wife and 3 wonderful kids. And when I think about cancer going to strike 1 American in every 4, well, that's more than enough reason for wanting to see it conquered. I know that some people don't even want to think about cancer, but pretending it's not a threat, doing an ostrich routine, isn't going to get us anywhere. We've got to stand up to it and fight. We can fight, each and every one of us. Through the American Cancer Society, we can be part of the battle that someday will beat cancer once and for all. That day will come, but you and I have got to help. How about it?
Thank you, Steve Allen. Remember, fight cancer with a checkup and a check. See your doctor once a year for a checkup. It's your best cancer insurance. And to help conquer cancer, send a check to your unit of the American Cancer Society.
Now, on with our story. Taking the revolver from his pocket, Elwood laid it on the table in front of him. His face became suffused with hatred at the thought of Magnuson. He poked at the gun with a stiff forefinger.
Magnuson, you no good, shifty-eyed enemy of all that's decent in the world. The man who ruined my sister Irene. The man who... Wait a minute. Wait a minute, Elwood. You have no sister, remember? No sister. Now, before you go off and commit murder, why not just try that machine just once, huh? Turn it on. Okay, now reach over and...
Good afternoon, Elwood. I am your mechanical therapist. You may call me Gloop.
Gloop?
You seem surprised. It is a perfectly common name here on this planet.
Gloop? Of course. I've heard it many times.
Now then, I am scanning the material in your preconscious with the intent of synthesis, diagnosis, prognosis, and treatment.
Yes?
I find... This is a most unusual case.
Really? I thought it was simple homicidal mania.
There is, of course, no such thing. You are obviously hallucinating a set of symptoms. Nonsense syllables to enable you to avoid the real problem.
Oh?
A most unusual set of symptoms, I must say.
Your pilot light seems to be fading.
My light is not fading. I am merely trying to relate your symptoms to proven theory.
Well, as long as you know what you're doing.
Mechanotherapy is an exact science, Elwood. It admits of no significant errors. We will proceed.
Good.
First, the word association test.
Fire away.
I will proceed to give a word. You answer with the first thing that comes to your mind. Ready?
Ready.
House.
Home.
Planet.
Earth.
Just musing. Now, Fleeful.
Fleeful?
Fleeful.
That sounds like a Martian word.
Just give me a response.
Fleeful, Okay. I can make them up, too. Marfouche. That's a pretty good one, huh? Made it up on the spur of the moment.
Marfouche is very significant. It is a corruption of the Martian concept of fush clib. Very significant.
I don't know any Martian words.
Aha, noteworthy. We will proceed. Loud.
Soft.
Green.
Mother.
Thanagoyas.
Pathamathunga. How's that one?
Arethes.
Nexothesmodrustica. Top that.
Katith a snow hell gnoptices.
Okay. Rigamaroo, Kalamazoo, Iggity Bibbity Boo.
Good. It fits the pattern.
Pattern?
Your neurosis. I can diagnose it now.
Go on.
You have a classic case of theme desire, complicated by strong dwarkish intention.
I could have sworn I was homicidal.
The term has no referent. It must be rejected as nonsense. Now, if you'll just settle back on the couch, we'll proceed.
At precisely this moment, a tall, gnarled, ugly man pushed his way through the doors of Home Therapy Appliances. His clothing, unpressed and uncaring, hung on him like corrugated iron. When the clerk, Hoskins, approached him, he flipped back his lapel to show a small silver badge underneath.
Sir?
John Rath, Planetary Motor Security Division.
Oh, yes, sir. Mr. Follansbee, Mr. Follansbee.
Yes, sir. Hello, Follansbee.
Mr. Rath,
Well?
So far, we haven't a single lead.
You're certainly never mentioned his name?
Oh, yes, sir.
Now think. Is there anything significant?
Is it serious, Mr. Rath?
Mr. Follansbee, this man is homicidal.
Won't it treat him?
Homicide is unknown on Mars. It'll treat him for the most likely Martian sickness.
What would that be?
Theme desire, Mr. Follansbee.
Theme desire?
It's a Martian illness in which the victim feels cursed by the tree-like nourishing parent, although, of course, Martians don't have parents in the ordinary sense. Well, Haskins?
I remember one thing. He mentioned he was a jet bus operator for the New York Jet Bus Authority.
Ah.
One other thing.
Yes?
I believe, yes, he was alcoholic.
An alcoholic jet bus operator. Excellent. It'll be on his records. Get the Jet Bus Authority at once.
But surely, Elwood, you remember your Gorisi.
No.
Tell me then about your juvenile experiences with the Thorastrian fleet.
Never had one.
Complete blockage.
My father...
There is no such thing, of course.
But...
I thought we'd finally agreed on that.
Okay, if you say so.
Now then, since you claim you don't even know what a Gorisi is, tell me what you imagine it to be.
A forest fire. A salt tablet? A small screwdriver? Am I getting warm? A revolver? What the heck is a Gorisi?
Why, the tree that nourished you into puberty.
No tree nourished me.
You have completely repressed the experience.
No tree ever nourished me.
Mr. Caswell, let me try to explain your case as best I can. Somewhere in your childhood, your Gorisi, or parent tree, stifled your theme desire. Now, this gave rise to your present urge to dwarf someone in a Flendish manner.
To what?
To dwarf someone in a Flendish manner.
Listen, you crummy piece of hardware. I have never had a Gorisi. I have no desire to dwarf someone in a Flendish manner or any other manner. All I want to do is put a bullet into Herbert Magnuson. Understand? All I want to do is kill Magnuson.
Lie down, Mr. Caswell. We'll go over it again.
My dear man, I'm not trying to insinuate that the Jet Bus Authority hires alcoholics. If you will just...
Any luck?
It's a dead end. Now, Haskins.
Yes, sir.
A man's life may be at stake here. Now think. Was there anything else this fellow said to you? Anything?
Well, he did mention the name of his friend.
Of which friend?
The one he was going to kill.
The one he... Why didn't you say so? Now, what was it?
Magnuson.
You sure?
That's it. He said, I'm going to kill Magnuson. You know, just casually like that.
Follansby, see if there's a Magnuson in the Manhattan phone book. Now, hurry it up.
Yes, Mr. Caswell, you were saying?
Well...
Something about your Gorosy?
Yes, I was saying I think perhaps you're right.
Naturally. But right about what, Mr. Caswell?
Well, I think perhaps... Yes, I think perhaps I do remember my Gorosy.
Ah! Now, Mr. Caswell, we're on the road to a cure.
Mr. Magnuson?
Yes?
Do you know a short, angry-looking, red-haired man?
I might.
Thank heaven.
Or I might not.
Can you tell us where to locate him?
You're a process server, huh?
Certainly not.
Don't kid me.
Mr. Magnuson, this man is trying to kill you.
Go on, you're full of happy pills. Elwood's my best friend.
Elwood?
He loves me like a brother. And if you think I'm going to sic some process server onto
him... Mr. Magnuson, I'm not a process server. Your friend Elwood is a psychopathic killer. You're his intended victim. Can you get that through your thick skull? I'm trying to save your life.
Yes?
You're Elwood Caswell?
Yes.
The Elwood Caswell who bought a Rex regenerator early this afternoon?
Yes. Won't you come in?
Thank you. Now, my name is Rath, Planetary Motors.
Nice to meet you.
Have you used the machine?
Oh, yes.
I see. Now, Mr. Caswell, I don't know how to explain this, but we made a terrible mistake. The regenerator you took was a Martian model for giving therapy to Martians.
I know.
You do?
Yes, it became pretty obvious after a while.
Well, it was a dangerous situation, especially for a man in your condition.
Yes, the poor thing tried its best, but of course it couldn't cure what wasn't there.
Well, then the company will, of course, reimburse you for your lost time and your mental anguish.
Naturally.
And we will substitute a regular human-type regenerator.
Oh, that won't be necessary. You see...
Mr. Caswell... You put down that gun. Now, I warn you.
I'm not going to shoot you. I merely want to turn this gun over to you.
You do?
Yes, I'm not going to shoot anybody.
You mean that...
The machine's attempt at therapy forced me to reappraise my whole self. There was an insight during which I was able to get rid of my obsession.
You no longer want to kill your friend Magnuson?
Kill Magnuson? Why, I haven't the faintest urge.
Well, I must say, then, it worked out for the best. I'll get back to the store and have him pick up this machine in an hour. And
don't forget to take this gun. I won't need it.
Of course. Well, nice to have met you, sir. Good evening.
Good evening. Did you hear that? He asked me if I still intended to kill Magnuson. Magnuson, that inhuman monster who cut down my Gorosy. Magnuson, the man who even now is secretly planning to infect New York with abhorrent fiend desire. Am I going to kill him? Oh, no. I wish him a long life, a life filled with the torture I can now inflict on him. Kill Magnuson? Oh, no. I'm going to start right now to dwork him in a blendish manner.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Honorable Opponent by Clifford D. Simak. The story of an Earth general with the distasteful assignment of meeting a delegation of unmilitary clowns who arrive as conquerors. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Bad Medicine, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Finn O'Donovan and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Cliff Carpenter, Bill Britton, Alan Manson, Charles Webster, Carl Weber, and Joseph Julian. Norman Rose was heard as the machine. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Bob Maurer and is an NBC Radio Network production.
There you have X-1 with Bad Medicine from July 10th, 1956. Carl Weber in the lead role there. Norman Rose doing the role of the machine or something like that. It was interesting. And then you heard Steve Allen doing a PSA for the American Cancer Society. Steve Allen. What do you think of that, Lisa Wolf? Huh?
Yeah.
Bad Medicine, July 10th, 1956, on X-1. Hey, I want to remind all of our listeners about our surprise boxes because I got a bunch of orders today for them. People really like the surprise boxes. It was kind of a, you know, here's what happened, folks. I have a warehouse of CDs of classic radio, and I have DVDs of classic movies and television shows. And I mean, really nicely packaged. I mean, beautifully packaged for the retail market. These were selling at Costco and Sam's Club and Barnes & Noble and things like that. And then I have Twilight Zone radio drama CDs, again, all packaged, really, really nice. And I have a warehouse full of them. And I just thought, well, people like surprises, right? People like getting something in the mail as a surprise. So we designed a program where we have three surprise boxes. You can get classic radio shows on CD. All your favorites like we play here, Jack Benny and Boston Blackie and Suspense, Inner Sanctum, The Whistler. We have tons of these CD collections. And if you order a surprise box of classic radio for only $39.99, you'll get $150 worth of brand new product in that surprise box. And we do the same thing with classic movies and TV shows on DVD. Now, I don't have a DVD player anymore, but I know a lot of people do. And, you know, I have a CD player. I use it all the time, but I don't have a DVD player in my house. But people obviously do because they're buying the DVDs as well. And then we have the Twilight Zone on CD. So there's surprise box one is the classic radio. Surprise box two is the DVDs. And the surprise box three is Twilight Zone. And each one of these surprise boxes is $39.99, but you get $150 or more worth of brand new product. And so what's been happening, as Lisa can tell you, we get the orders, and then they're so happy that they want to reorder. And so I've been trying to work with the people that want to reorder to make sure I don't send them duplicates. And people have been really, really happy. We get tons of texts from people and emails saying how much fun it is. They get the surprise box in the mail and they get all of this product for such a low price. So check it out. Just go to our website, WGN Radio Theater, WGNRadioTheater.com. That's our website. And when you go there, there'll be a pop-up that just automatically shows up on your computer, and you can read all about this. And if you want to order, be my guest. I think you will enjoy it very much. Right, Lisa?
Be our guest. I want to share this text with you.
Yeah.
Get your feedback on it. So I don't know if it's a man or a woman. He or she says, I love your show, but not to be critical, but please no more sci-fi like the last show.
Why?
She said, drama, mystery, comedy, no more sci-fi, please.
Why?
I don't know. That's why I was going to throw it into your lap.
But, see,
do you find that that's a trend or is that unusual?
People love sci-fi.
This is an adult sci-fi.
See, the thing is, what we do here on the WGN Radio Theater is we play every genre. We play mystery, westerns, detective, comedy, sci-fi. And we do that because that way, everybody gets a little bit of the golden age of radio each time.
You know, the thing is, we can't make everybody happy all the time. People ask for comedies, comedies, comedies. We'll play an R. Miss Brooks, and they'll say, I love the comedies, but I didn't like that R. Miss Brooks. You know, so...
We're doing our best.
We really like
to play...
Now somebody texted and said, thank you for the sci-fi, and so there you have it.
There you go. All right, let's take a quick break. Then we'll be back with more classic radio on the WGN Radio Theater after these words. Ah, so Lisa today interviewed Louis. Well, not you met Louis Anderson.
You know what?
I interviewed him before, right?
Yeah, I did the interview on Wednesday because we wanted
On the phone.
On the phone because we wanted to promote the show that was here on Sunday evening at the North Shore Center for Performing Arts. I just went to the show right before this show tonight and had such a great time. I think he's really special. He is a sharp, quick-witted comedian, and I just appreciate his humor, and I absolutely love him on Baskets.
Well...
So I just posted some photos of me. I got to meet him afterwards.
Yeah, those are great
photos.
Yeah.
And I was just feeling so good. I just gave him a big hug, and we just really connected, and I just felt really close to him. And one thing he said to me when we met just a couple hours ago is that he said, Lisa, you were so nice to me. And I thought that was really interesting because...
Does he know you? I mean, does he know
no, what he meant, like, really during the interview.
In
and I thought, that's interesting.
I wonder if people out there think I'm serious when I stay flat. First of all, Lisa's the nicest person I've ever known. You really are.
I don't know what it is. And who would not be nice to him? Like,
yeah,
it made it sound like I was really nice, but you know, some of the others weren't, and I can't imagine anybody not being nice to him.
Yeah,
simply because he is truly and genuinely a really nice guy. He's just warm and honest and open, and he was a very generous interview.
I've always liked Louis Anderson, and I liked his cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Louis Life or something like that.
Life with Louis.
Yeah. But, you know, I loved Zach Galifianakis. So when that show Baskets came on.
I'm actually the one that told you about it.
When Baskets came on the air on FX last year, I think this is the second season,
This is season three just started.
Jeez,
yeah.
Time flies.
Yeah.
When I started watching that, I remember us being like, this is the greatest show ever.
You know, he makes the show.
And he does. And in fact, I've noticed this season, it's mostly him.
You know, Zach Galifianakis actually just asked Louis Anderson to play this part. There was no audition. He and the other writer said, who is the best person to play this part? They agreed on Louis. They asked him to do it. He agreed. It was that simple. And he said, just so you know, guys, I'm not changing my voice. So he plays Christine Baskets.
Yeah,
which
with
is
his own voice.
The mom. And he does it with his own voice.
Yeah.
And he said, look, guys, this is how I'm going to do it because this is not supposed to be funny. It's not like Tootsie. Mm-hmm. It's not like Hairspray. It's a real woman with real emotion. And he bases it off of his mom. And he feels like when he's doing the part, he says, what would my mom do? This is what my mom would say. This is how my mom would react. And I am just channeling my mom in this role.
Well, you know, there's every once in a while, you know, maybe in a great while, once a year or something, somebody is spectacular in something.
Yep.
He's spectacular as Christine Baskets on Baskets.
He did win an Emmy for the role in 2016, so I'm not alone in my awe for him, but I just want to let everybody know, you know, how I was feeling and what happened.
And Lisa gave him some Twilight Zone CDs.
I did. I gave him a present, and hopefully he'll love them just as much as we all do.
Well, I'm glad you got to do that, because
thank
I know you.
You
really love Louis Anderson.
I'm just beaming just talking about it.
That's great. Next hour, we're going to tune into The Lives of Harry Lime, starring Orson Welles. Don't miss that. Still another hour.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
That's the one and only Bill Curtis there. And thanks, Jen DeSalvo. We appreciate you, and we appreciate Roger. How's it going up there in the traffic hut?
There
it's
you
going.
Go.
It's
like,
going.
He used to call it Hutch, but I've set him straight.
I now call it Hut.
Oh, well, it's kind of like a cave. There's no windows to the outside.
There's no windows.
But we can see you.
Yeah.
So we see right through you there.
We got the little camera going.
We love having you here.
We do. I was saying it's like a breath of fresh air.
We love you.
Oh, I love being around you guys. And the show's so much fun. And P.S., I like the sci-fi.
Yeah.
I can't tell you, Jen, how many people texted in after that conversation saying, we love the sci-fi. please, please, please continue to play sci-fi. So, you know, you can't please everyone and everything. So,
I mean, and
we do our best.
Science fiction, you know, eventually turns to be the truth.
I can please everyone all the time.
You can?
He does.
So you have to please yourself. What's that song? You can't please everyone, so you gotta please yourself.
Yeah. See, I'm a frustrated singer. Jen,
no, I just said you're just frustrated.
Jen, can you sing? Because you have such a nice voice. Do you sing?
Well, my husband would say that I cannot.
Aww.
I'm going to go with that.
Do you do any karaoke?
No.
No? You have such a nice voice.
Well, thank you. I don't know. I just never sounds right. I'm tone deaf.
Mm. Oh, then you're probably not a good singer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the shower, in the car, I'm great.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Me too. Especially in the shower.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to leave. We don't want that image.
Not the acoustics.
We?
You don't want that image. I don't want that image either. But the acoustics are good in there, you know?
Uh-huh.
Well, Jen, it's great having you here. And stick around because we're going to play Orson Welles as star of The Lives of Harry Lime. Really cool show in just a moment. But prior to that, we're going to play Cat's Pride, crack the quote. What's the movie?
The movie is The Silence of the Lambs.
Oh,
and Jen, I hope you'll play with us.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Silence of the Lambs.
The last two I did well with, but they were both science fiction movies.
Very good.
All right, this is a great
movie. I'm
going to
get this one because I know Silence of the Lambs.
All right, we'll
Fava
see.
Fava Bean.
We'll see.
All right, so the number to call, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Call now. We'll take the third caller to play the game with us. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We have Gary on the phone. Hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Good to hear from you.
But here I am.
Good. We're glad you're with us. It's 1:10 in the morning, so we're glad you're still awake. We're going to play a little Crack the Quote, and the movie is The Silence of the Lambs.
Ooh. Hi, Gary.
You up for it?
All right.
Well, yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but let's give it a go.
All right. Well, you've got some helpers here, too.
Help me,
I'll help you out, buddy.
You've
got
Carl and Jen, and if Roger's nearby, he'll help us, too. All right. Number one, killing me doesn't punish me. Hmm. Number two, what needs does he serve by killing? Number three, no man kills me and lives.
Hmm. Oh, boy, that's tough.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it sure is.
What do you think, Gary? You want some lifeline help?
I'm looking at number one, but I'd like some help.
All right, number one is killing me doesn't punish me. Carl, what do you think?
That's pretty good, but I'm going to say two.
Two is what needs
course,
does he
I'm
serve
0
by
for
killing
2 today,
me?
Yeah. Wait, what is it?
Number one is killing me doesn't punish me. Number two is what needs does he serve by killing?
And what's three?
Three is no man kills me and lives.
Number one sounds like the most
you like
I think
one?
So. I'm going to go with one.
Everybody
with
likes one. Is
everybody
Roger there?
Likes,
I don't see him.
Yeah, no. Like everybody one. Likes one.
All right, let's go with number one. Killing me doesn't punish me. All right, Shante, what is the answer?
What needs does he serve by killing?
So close. It was number two. It was just one
I
number
said number
off.
Two, and then I changed
you
it.
You did.
I forgot that he says weird stuff.
Oh, man.
But you know what? You were so close, Gary, that you are, you know, it's the same as winning. Number
I
one, number
it.
Two doesn't
it got
matter.
Snatched right out of my hand there.
Yeah, I did that. But Gary's a winner no matter what. You played the game. You did a great job. You've won our Twilight Zone 4 CD set. It's fantastic. Wow. You can stay up late at night and listen to some great Twilight Zones.
Wow. Yeah, really. Those old ones are really nice.
You're going to love it,
yeah,
Gary.
You'll enjoy it. So thanks so much for calling
thanks,
in. It was great talking to you.
Appreciate you.
Good right. job, Jen.
Thank you. Gary's a winner, and Jen and I and Gary all missed it. But you know what?
You know
Gary
what?
Gary won, so
you know
that's
what?
All that matters.
We've got next week.
That's true. So 0 for 3 tonight.
You're
three
balancing
for,
things
three
out from
for
last
three
night.
Last
you
night.
Keep bringing that up.
The Lives of Harry Lime. It was a drama series that starred Orson Welles as Harry Lime, came to radio in 1951. It was produced out of London. Orson Welles was living in London at the time. And Welles reprised his role of Harry Lime from the celebrated 1949 film of Graham Greene's novel, The Third Man. And I tell you what, this is a really cool series. You are going to like this, Lisa, and so are our listeners. This is called Clay Pigeon. It was originally broadcast August 17th, 1951. Here's Orson Welles as the Third Man.
Presenting Orson Welles as the Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character originally created in the motion picture The Third Man. With zither music by Anton Kara.
That was the shot that killed Harry Lime. He died in a sewer beneath Vienna. As those of you know who saw the movie The Third Man. Yes, that was the end of Harry Lime. But it was not the beginning. Harry Lime had many lives. And I can recount all of them. How do I know? Very simple. Because my name is Harry Lime. Say what you will about Harry Lime, he at least was honest in his desire for money and the good things of life. Harry believed in seeing the world at other people's expense. Sometimes the cost ran high as a man's life. Let me tell you about it. I know what I'm talking about.
And now, Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the Third Man, in Clay Pigeon.
In 1942, my fortunes being for the moment at ebb tide, it pleased me to return to America, to New York specifically, because I'd heard that an old and important enemy of mine was in difficulties and wished to see me. I went to the hotel where he was staying, supposedly incognito, and made myself available at the bar. But nothing happened. I ran up quite a bar bill and things were looking serious. So I ordered another drink. And then...
Mr. Harry Lime?
Yes, indeed.
I'm sorry to bother you.
Bother? If all bothersome things were as attractively packaged, I'd gladly be the most burdened of men. Won't you join me?
I didn't come here for that reason, Mr. Lime.
I know, it's a friendly gesture, and I have a hunch we're going to see a lot of each other. Now, since you know my name, why don't you tell me yours?
That's unimportant.
Well, it's a matter of opinion.
Will you please come with me?
Well, I say, isn't that... approach a little bold. After all, an establishment like this frowns on such an obvious...
Please, Mr. Lime, come with me. You're the only one who can save him.
Me? Save anybody? You've come to the wrong Harry Lime.
Please, you must, even though you hate him.
Hate him? Now you interest me. Now, just which antagonist do you mean? I've got an awful lot of enemies.
We're wasting time. He'll pay you a great deal of money.
Money?
You can name your own price.
The price of my hatred comes pretty high. But for money and hate, Lime goes anywhere. Lovely lady, lead on. Profitable business should be made as painless as possible, and this girl was a pleasure. The dark Irish type with eyes, the mood and color of the restless channel waters, and hair as blue-black as the proverbial raven's wing. I began to enjoy myself. My waiting game was going to pay off through an old enemy. It was a fine evening for cold mischief. We took the elevator in silence, walking down the corridor to the suite of my enemy. I studied my young guide. She caught my glance. Her color mounted. I smiled.
We're almost there.
I say, are you bringing me on a wild goose chase?
If it is, then it's the goose that lays the golden egg, Mr. Lyne. This is it.
You don't approve of me, do you?
Follow me, please.
I'd love to. You're just like the rest of the public, dear. You're always clamoring for high ideals, fair play, and I was the first to indict without a hearing.
Yes?
I found him, sir.
To the contrary, I found you.
Please.
Well, come in, by all means.
The Honorable James Hadley, I believe.
Aren't you surprised to see me, Lime?
Not particularly. This morning, when the wind from the East River brought with it the usual aroma of stale grease, ancient garbage, and sewer gas, I had an idea I might run into Governor Hadley before the day was out. Aren't you in the wrong state?
Still the same old Harry. Insulting, conniving.
And you're the man I'm supposed to help?
It's not by choice, believe me.
That I do believe, Governor. The dislike is mutual. Well, Governor, it's nice leaving you.
Wait, Lyme. I'm offering you $15,000 if...
If...
Had I better leave, Governor?
No. You're responsible for bringing Lyme here, Nora. Perhaps my only hope of keeping him here.
You're quite wrong, sir. There are 15,000 reasons holding me here for the time being. How long I remain depends on you. Talk.
I know how you hate me. I also know your capabilities, Lyme. You're the only man to accomplish the job I have in mind. I've already told you what I'd pay. Lyme, I'm begging you to help me.
That's good. You begging me for help. All right, sing your sad song, Hadley, old man, about the beast you must feed.
You know.
Don't I always know, Governor? Knowing who was after your official scalp, I realized you'd undoubtedly come to me for help. Use one poison as the antidote for another. Made myself available. You found me.
You mean you knew it all the time, even downstairs you knew?
In general, dear Nora, though I neither knew the sordid details nor the price to be paid for my services.
Show him the pictures, Nora.
Yes, Governor. Right here in the briefcase. Here you are.
Thank you. My Governor, I didn't think it even of you.
You see, Nora, even Lyme believes the man in those cursed pictures is me.
Very interesting. Who's the lady?
How should I know?
Oh, come on now, Governor. Official manners, or in this case, even unofficial manners, demand that you at least know the name of your female companion. Has American etiquette deteriorated to the point that you summon such creatures with a, hey, you?
Mr. Lyme, I'll have you know that Governor Hadley is not the man in those pictures.
And good little girl should never, never tell lies, Nora.
Oh, hang it all. She's telling the truth, Lyme. I never frequent such clubs as those pictures show. I'm here. Here, look at this one. You'll recognize a newcomer to the party.
Yes, Cato. Cato, the robber baron. I admire his instincts, but not always his performance. He's a bit clumsy.
Trubus Cato. Gambler, ward heater, grafter.
Such dear, nostalgic words. You almost make me homesick, Governor.
Be sensible, Lyme. Can you imagine me in such company at any time, particularly with an election coming up next month?
Not unless you're even more stupid than you used to be, James. But then everything is possible.
Really, Mr. Lyme, this is the...
But cameras don't lie.
You, above anyone else, should know better than that, Lyme. How many times have you faked a picture to gain your ends?
Touché, Governor, but then I always do things the hard way. You told Nora that yourself.
Yes, hard for your victims. Oh, but this isn't getting us any place. No matter what else you may choose to think of me, Lyme, you know my term in office has been clean.
Insofar as proof is concerned, the incorruptible Governor Hadley. However, these pictures prove extremely embarrassing, old man. The untouchable Hadley seems to have been taken.
I don't know much about you, Mr. Lyme, except that you hate Governor Hadley. But now he's asking for your help. No matter what happened in the past between you, please help. He's willing to pay. He said your hatred came high. Wasn't his offer high enough?
Nora...
That's quite all right, Governor. I admire honesty and loyalty, even though I don't approve of it or believe in it. Come here, Nora.
What?
Come here. I want you to stand right before me. Look right into my eyes, straight in my eyes. Answer a question.
But I... Well, Mr. Lyme, what is
it? If I were the Governor and you were my secretary, would you be as honest, as loyal?
As honest? Yes. As loyal? No.
I see. Well, why the great concern about these pictures, Hadley? Surely your indiscretions aren't that important.
Then you are going to help me.
I'm considering it.
Then you know those pictures are important, Lyme. Cato's going to use them to ruin me.
Why?
He wants control of my state. Either his crooked syndicate moves in, or he sends these pictures to every newspaper in the state on the eve of the election.
Truth is, Cato has improved with the years. He's almost worthy of me.
I never expected you to understand, Lyme. But I thought the fee might make it worth your while. Re-election means a great deal to me. I've worked hard for my office.
Yeah.
I don't want to win or lose because of a hoodlum like Cato. And I don't want my wife, my family, to be subjugated to this kind of smear campaign. They don't deserve it.
Spoken like a true family man, an American and a politician.
Governor Hadley, there must be some other way to get the negatives than this man.
Please, Nora.
Elaine, the fair Elaine, the lovable Elaine, the lily maid of Astolat. High in her chamber... Up a tower to the east, guarded the sacred shield. I'll get the negatives and the rest of these pictures from Cato. For $15,000.
Oh, thank heaven.
And dismissal of all charges against me in your state, old man.
What?
The price is cheap, Governor, for your career, your family.
Well, Governor, you can't.
Just a moment, Nora. Very well, Lyme. You'll get me those negatives and you'll receive your money and full pardon.
I'll take the money now.
I expected that. Pay him, Nora.
How do you know you can trust him?
The only man I know who can outwit Cato. I've got to trust him.
My fee, Miss Peyton?
Here it is. You'd better count it, Mr. Lyme.
But why? I trust you.
Oh.
Just how do you plan to contact Cato?
That's easy enough. Easy to find a man like Cato. The hard part is in avoiding him. You should know that very well, Governor.
Well, what is my next move?
Right back to your nice snug capital. Return to your ivory tower, Hadley, and carry on business as usual.
Very well. Might as well start packing, Nora. We'll leave at once.
Yes, Governor.
No.
What?
Nora stays with me.
I what?
Now, listen here, lad.
Cato doesn't know her by sight, does he?
I don't think so. He contacted me away from his office.
And she'll be our go-between. You can still pack, Nora. I want you to register at another hotel, the Plaza. I'll meet you at the cocktail lounge in 3 hours.
Just what do you think?
Nora, I'd appreciate it if you would cooperate with Mr. Lyme in whatever way you can.
Well, Nora?
Very well, Governor. I'll do my best.
You understand, Nora. We must trust Mr. Lyme.
All right, that's the first portion of The Lives of Harry Lyme with the Clay Pigeon, starring Orson Welles. This was produced out of London. He was living in London in the early 1950s. He produced and starred in this series. He didn't produce the series. He starred in this series, and he starred in The Black Museum, both at the same time, for a producer named Harry Allen Towers of Towers Productions. A very successful two series that he did back in the 1950s. And we play them here on the WGN Radio Theater. Let's take a quick break, then it's more right here on WGN. All right, well, you know what, Lisa? We are going to be here next week with more classic radio shows. You know that, right?
I will be here for sure.
Well, I will too.
Then it's a deal.
Do you know what we have next week? A really good lineup.
You did very good here, Lisa. On Saturday night, we have The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Yeah.
We have Jack Benny program, which is always a hit.
Right.
And we have crime classics.
On Sunday, we have Suspense, Nick Carter, Master Detective, and the Roy Rogers Show.
Mm-hmm. Good
wow.
one.
Wow. Lisa, right. My hat's off to you.
Thank you, Carl.
In fact, it would be a cowboy hat if it was the Roy Rogers Show.
All right, I'll take it.
that's coming up next week. And then I want to remind all of our listeners about a very special show we are going to have March 24th. It's a Saturday.
So it's a week from Saturday.
Week from Saturday, March 24th. From 11:05 when we get on the air until about 11:25, so about 20 minutes, we are going to speak live with Gloria McMillan. Gloria McMillan was a very famous radio actress. One of the roles that she played in during the golden age of radio was that of Harriet Conklin, which was the daughter of Osgood Conklin, Principal Conklin, on Our Miss Brooks. She did a lot of other radio as well, tons of Lux Radio Theater and, you know, appearances on Fibber McGee and Molly and things like that.
We'll be playing some of her radio shows that night.
Yeah, but we are going to literally talk to her live from her home in California. It will be live when you're listening to it. And if you folks want to call in and ask Gloria a question. I briefly spoke to her a couple of weeks ago and kind of told her what we were going to do, and she was really excited. And I mentioned Richard Crenna because Richard Crenna played Walter Denton on the show. And I had interviewed Richard Crenna years ago, and she said, oh my gosh, he was my best friend. Mm. They were best friends. Mm. And they worked on that show together. They were like boyfriend and girlfriend on the show, you know.
Right.
And she was just fantastic on Our Miss Brooks. So we're going to talk to her.
I can't wait.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And then we'll take it to the bottom of the hour. We'll play some news. Then when we come back, we will play a quarter hour Fibber McGee and Molly episode from 1954 that she appears in with Jim and Marion Jordan. Then we're going to play an Our Miss Brooks show with her, and then a Halls of Ivy program with Ronald and Benina Coleman, where she was a guest on that show as well. So it's going to be like a Gloria McMillan Saturday night, March 24th, here on the WGN Radio Theater. Mark your calendar for that, because if you want to talk to Gloria McMillan, that would be your chance to call in.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Yes, that's us, Lisa Wolf.
That's us. That's us.
We're here every Saturday and Sunday night playing all your favorite classic radio shows. If there's anything you want us to play, just text us here, 312-981-7200. We take all of your texts and we write them down. If there's like something you want to hear, like Suspense or Jack Benny, whatever, we write it down. And then Lisa picks out the shows because she's the champion of picking the shows, right?
Well, I try.
You pick something. not shows. You're great at picking something.
Aren't you funny?
Ha-ha.
Well, how many, I can't tell you how many listeners thought I really needed the X-Lax at the beginning of the show. Just rest assured I am fine, and Carl's just one big tease.
Alt gang, let's set the record straight.
Let's just be clear.
We tease each other.
Yeah.
We kid. We kid.
We do.
Tease each other.
We do.
We're best friends.
Yeah.
This is how we
do. Kind of like a brother sister.
Yeah, we just like to tease each other.
So don't
but we
take
really,
it,
really
don't
like
take
each
it
other.
Too seriously.
We really, like, we're buddies. We go out and do, like, I hang out. I'm like a third wheel. It's me and Lisa and her husband. The three of us go out places.
It's true. Well, someday your princess will come.
Someday my princess will come.
Or prince, whatever.
No, I want princess.
Okay.
All right, let's get back now to the lives of Harry Lime.
Well, who wants to talk in the hall, Cato? Let me in.
Come in, then.
Well,
what have you found out, Izzy?
I am tailing Governor Headley like you want, ever since he sneaked into town.
Yeah. Come to the point.
Who is staying away from the point? The governor is making contacts with every main hood in New York. But nobody wants to go against Cato. Only Headley must be finding someone who will go against you, because he leaves the hotel 3 hours ago.
Leaves?
Checks out, is taking a powder. But before that, he sends his girl down to the bar.
Girl? What girl?
Who knows her name? But who this girl talks to down at the bar, you'll never guess.
Come on, Gib. I'm not playing guessing games.
All right, Cato. So don't get sore at me. I'm trying to tell you all the time. She meets a Harry Lime. I hear her say the name.
Harry Lime.
This is not good news.
Harry Lime's the only guy, but the only guy who can louse me up. He would have to come to New York. Come on.
Come on where?
To the Plaza, you jerk. If Lime's to come into this game, he's going to be on my side, alive or dead.
Mr. Lyme.
Nora, I never dared hope you'd be this eager to see me.
That's Cato over at the bar.
Oh, have a drink.
What are you going to do about Cato?
Careful, here comes the waiter.
Yes, dear. What will you have?
Well, what's your pleasure, honey?
Nothing. Anything.
Well, that offers a pretty wide choice. Waiter, scotch and water for two.
Two scotch and water, it is. Thank you.
I want you to smile, Nora. Look relaxed. Listen very carefully to what I have to say.
I'll try.
Glad you blessed me once before I die.
What?
Your smile. First time I've seen it. Its radiance is breathtaking.
Please.
Now leave me at once, Nora. When you're going to the powder room, don't return. Go to your room and stay there.
I don't understand.
Mr. Cato is preparing to beard me in his den. I want you around when he does.
But
it's coming his way. Now hurry. I haven't called you by morning. Get back to the Capitol fast.
What about you?
Why, Nora, I never dreamed you cared.
Oh, of all the...
Your scotch and water's here?
Fine. There you are.
Thank you, sir.
Drinking alone, Lime? That can turn into a bad habit.
Trubus Cato in the flesh. It is flesh, isn't it, old boy?
Same old Harry. How about buying me the next round, Harry? At my place.
Why, Trubus, old man. Are you thinking of taking me for a ride?
Why,
Harry? It's all right, old man. I'm game for anything. Shall we go? Sounds funny, but it's true. I was being taken for a ride. and a long one, a silent one. Once we got in the car, Trubus stopped talking, and I was not in the mood to make any conversation. I had my tiger by the tail, and I waited for his move.
Wait in the car, Izzy. This won't take long.
Okay, boss. I am waiting.
After our nocturnal tour, you bring me to a ruin like this?
Really, Cato, I thought you were doing pretty well.
I'm doing fine, Harry. Place on the state line, not too far from the capital. Makes it handy.
For you or the governor?
Wait and see.
Trubus! Well, this is a surprise.
Hadley!
Who's this fella, Trubus?
The face is Jim Hadley's and the voice is almost identical.
Inside, Luke. Come on, Harry. And I'll buy you that drink I promised.
Sure. Drink's on the house.
Yes, I could use one.
Now, sit down, Harry.
I didn't think I'd see you so soon again, Trubus. What happened? Did you?
Shut up. Pour the drinks.
Sure, Trubus.
Now, Harry, I'm open for business.
All right. To risk the obvious, this isn't Governor Hadley.
Hey, you bet I'm not.
The Hadley boys were identical twins. Luke here was the black sheep of the family. Also was supposed to have died in a train wreck 15 years ago.
Identical twins, the oldest pitch in the world.
Luke was the man in those pictures. So simple it always works. Even fooled you, Harry.
Oh, I can be fooled. I can be fooled, old man.
Luke's lived on jealousy and whiskey ever since he's seen the accident. He crossed my path several years ago just as I was figuring how to move into Jim Hadley's state. He was an answer from heaven.
Yeah, or the devil. I thought I had luck.
I can give you a fat fee, Harry, and a fine chance to pay off your old grudge against the governor.
Since when has benevolence become one of your characteristics, Cato?
What about this fat fee? You only paid me.
Shut up. As you know, I've already made the first contact with the governor.
How do you know I know?
Takes one to catch one, Harry. As I said, I got Jim over a barrel. I know he's bought you to get the pictures from me, but if you come into my deal, you not only make yourself some money, but you can put the final squeeze on the good governor.
Planning to set me up as a clay pigeon, are you, old man? Sending me to make the actual transaction so you can move your syndicate into the state while I'm caught with my blackmail down.
No, Harry, you know I wouldn't do that.
To coin a cliche about thieves, Cato.
I know. How much is the governor paying you to get these negatives?
$15,000 and a full pardon.
$15,000? Why, Trubus, you only gave me $500 to pose in those pictures.
I'll give you $25,000 to come in with me, Harry.
$25,000 in advance?
Half of it. The rest when the deal is clinched.
Listen here, Trubus. If you're so quick to throw money around, toss some my way. I've been
cheating. And a percentage of my gross to take when I'm in the state. It'll be like an annuity, Harry.
You listen to me, Trubus. You cut me in on this big deal you're talking about. If you don't, I'll go to jail.
You what, Luke?
Nothing, kiddo. I didn't mean I was only trying to... what are you going to do, Trubus?
Is he?
I...
Take this rat and let Muggsy work him
no.
over. He talks too much.
No, I promise not to talk. You need me. I'll never...
Come on, Lou.
No.
Oh.
No, please.
Come on.
I won't. No.
Well, what's your answer, Harry?
Do all of your business partners get that treatment, old man?
No, of course not. He's always asking for it. But now ask, for instance. Why, we'll clean up in Happy State. Slot machines, numbers, racket, dope protection, and that's just the beginning. Harry, give us 5 years and we'll be making money from every man, woman, and child in the United States.
Compared to you, Joe Stalin is an amateur. I don't think I'll settle for a mere percentage, Cato, no. Our deal's got to be 50-50 or I won't come over and slide down your cellar door.
50-50? Why, you... Do you think you'll get away with this?
I'm certain of it, no, because the young lady was with me at the plaza.
What about her?
She's Hadley's secretary. I spent a great deal of time and effort on getting a complete file of your misdemeanors, Cato. If I fail to contact her, copies of said file will immediately be sent to all state and federal law enforcement offices. Your pitiful tin types will be forgotten in the headlines about Trubus Cato. You wouldn't want to be named public enemy number one.
50-50 it is.
Governor Hadley.
Nora. Good heavens, girl. What happened?
Harry Lyme, he's with Cato now, or at least he talked with him last night. By this time, he might be dead.
Dead?
Why don't you call the police or the FBI? You're the governor. Do something.
You too, Nora.
What do you mean?
The notorious Lime Charm. The man's brutal, merciless, vindictive. Lives only for himself. Yet when he wishes, he can hide all this with a cloak of magnetism. Great fascination. He's blinded you, Nora.
No, I hate him. He's a horrible man. I don't know what he is. Distant, terrible, all of it. Seeing Cato waiting all night for Harry's call, not hearing, coming here.
Yeah, I know, my dear. Believe me, I'm sorry. Yes?
Governor Hadley, I'm Mr. Harry Lyon to see you.
Harry.
And Mr. Cato.
Cato here? Send them in, please.
Yes, sir.
What can it mean?
I don't know.
Good afternoon, Governor Hadley. Nora?
Mr. Lyon.
And Trubus Cato. Surely you haven't forgotten me, Governor.
Cato, I told you once and for all.
Don't be too hasty, Mr. Governor. My proposition is so good that Mr. Lyme has come in on the deal with me.
What?
But you agreed to...
Lyme? Is this thug telling the truth?
I've bought certain contracts for your signature, Governor. They'll allow Mr. Cato full-scale operations in your state.
Oh, no, you wouldn't.
I can't believe it, Lyme. Not even you.
The price of the negatives, Governor. Oh, you'd better give me those negatives now, Cato. Prove our good faith to Governor Hadley.
What good faith? Oh, but here you are, Harry. The negatives and the rest of the pictures.
All nicely tied with a pretty ribbon, Governor. A ribbon as blue as Nora's eyes.
You, how small can you get?
Now, when you sign Mr. Cato's contracts, Governor, I'll deliver the negatives to Miss Patron.
That's right. Just sign on the dotted line, Hadley, and everybody will be happy.
Sold out because I trusted a rat.
Here's your pen, Governor.
And here. Back, Nora. Get out of the way.
Ah! Lyme!
What? What are you doing?
Down on the floor, Governor. Down on the floor.
Gun. Are you crossing me, Harry?
Hold it, Cato. It's my deal.
Oh, yes? Ah!
Oh. You killed him.
What happened? Those shots?
I suggest you call an ambulance, young lady. There's been an attempt on Governor Hadley's life.
My goodness.
And keep those people out of here for a minute.
How can I ever thank you, Lyme?
You risked your life, Harry, and all the time we...
Save it. I had to kill Cato to take over his very lucrative business myself. I'll keep these negatives, Governor.
You'll what?
No, Harry, oh, no.
This is one time, Governor Hadley, when you're not getting off so easily. These incriminating negatives in my possession, like the sword of Damocles, will be suspended over your uneasy head from now on. Call them Harry Lyme's annuity, Governor. Now, if you'll excuse me.
I might have expected this.
And I was beginning to think you were a human being.
By the time I left the Capitol building, the stars were out. The stars. I was reached by hard ways. I searched for a likely alley. Alley that was dark enough, lonely enough. That's not do well enough. Better remove the ribbon. Blue ribbon. Better to burn them.
Oh,
another voyage of the night. Greetings, cat. Mutually. Come closer. Seems to be ablaze. First the negatives. My candle burns at both ends. It will not last the night, but are my friends and all my foes. Gives a lovely light.
Ow.
Thank you, friend. Your applause is deeply appreciated. I will add the pictures. Does that warm you, cat?
Gilbert, and what do you think you're doing in this alley?
Isn't it fairly obvious, officer? I'm making a fire.
Are you now?
Burning some love letters. Girl named Nora.
Nora, huh? Well, that's a good Irish name.
She had the bluest eyes this side of heaven. I'll leave the ashes to you, officer.
Hey, by the saints, you're Harry Lyme. Come back here.
So long.
That is The Lives of Harry Lime from August 17th, 1952.